Hey, fellow NDE fans, we have some exciting things coming up on the other side, but we could really use your help and support to keep going with this channel. Our outreach team works around the clock, making sure to bring you the best NDE stories that we can find. But now we're looking to expand into other countries to get near-death experiences from around the globe. However, we need your help and support to make this happen. This is why we're introducing our YouTube membership program. Get access to exclusive, ad-free episodes that haven't been on YouTube. Watch and participate in live Q&As with the guests. Engage directly with us and NDEers. Participate in giveaways and live events. And most importantly, you will ensure our channel's continuous efforts to seek out and uncover these important experiences worldwide. Support us by hitting the Join Now button below. Thank you for your continued viewership and support. Your help will make a difference, and we look forward to building our community together with you.
I am David Paris. I am a COVID survivor. My near-death story meant that in 2020, when the pandemic really hit New York City, I was at the center of it. In March, I was hearing around the world people were dying, and I wasn't worried. I was 45 or 46. I was relatively healthy, and I thought things would be fine. Then one day I got sick, and then the sickness lasted a week, and then I fell asleep in front of my fridge in the morning, and I woke up barely breathing, and I thought to myself, I might have a problem. Actually, was trying to get back to bed, but was too weak, and got phone calls from my family that said, you need to go to the hospital. I made my way there, and the moment I walked in to the hospital, I went from barely able to breathing to couldn't breathe at all. Within seconds, they put an oxygen tank on me, and I realized, oh, I actually haven't been breathing in a long time. Didn't know that until I actually felt what oxygen was. Put me in a wheelchair, and I was like, okay, maybe this is pretty bad. I spent the next 5 days probably hallucinating pretty bad. If you've heard the COVID stories from people in the hospital, the hallucinations were out of control. I kept having to kick hundreds of people out of my room. I found out later nobody was in my room, but it felt like they were all, I know, it's like it was a wild, wild, wild time. And then I remember the moment where they said, okay, we're going to have to put you under. They were intubating people, not knowing. At the time, 20% of the people survived. The last words were my sister telling me, you know, only 20% of people come out of this. And I'm like, that'll be fine. Don't worry about it. And I had that kind of attitude because I thought at the time, you know, only the older people die. And then that's when things shifted. I can say from this reality, I'll talk a little bit about, which meant in the next day, they went from intubation, like a medical coma, into an ECMO machine. An ECMO machine is what they use when you have heart surgery. So it does the work of your heart and does the work of your lungs and while you're unconscious. Usually they do it in heart surgery, you know, anywhere from 12 to 24 hours. I was on it for a month. And that first few days, my heart stopped 4 times. And it's a little controversial what I'm about to say. I actually remember the moment I was dying. Some people said, how can you remember this? And I remember because when I did wake up a month later, the clarity of the moment of facing a spirit, I was in a theater. And in the theater was this, almost like a Buddha, but not quite. It's this Japanese figure. There is a, what do you call those things where you have a mythological figure, but I never seen before, but actually there is a something of that. And I had somebody look it up, and I saw this creature, and they said, sorry, you're dying. And they pointed to the exit sign, and I said, I cried. I was like, I begged. You know, it was funny. I up until that moment, I was so scared of potentially, I was kind of depressed in my life. And I was thinking, if I die, it'll be right. I did a lot in my life. I was in America's Got Talent. I was a semifinalist. I was an acrobatic dance champion. I did a bunch of cool stuff, you know? But when you actually face death and you're like, oh, that's it. I'm not somebody who necessarily believes in afterlife. I didn't. And I was like, no, I'm not ready to die, please. And then the figure showed me this curvature of a half moon. And in that, just apologized and saying, sorry, you're going, you're done. This is it. And that was what activated something inside of me that I'll never, ever forget. Whether it happened in the moment I was dying or whether it happened afterwards, I can't say. But I'll never forget saying, no, I refuse to die. There's no way I'm going to let it go. And the spirit told me, well, okay, we're going to let you try to struggle to live. But if you fight to live, you have to fight more than you've ever had in your life for longer than ever you had in your life. course, you're about to die. You'll say, yes, you'll do whatever. And then I spent, I can't say, it seems like years, months, years, something like that, in an open sea, just fighting for watching boats to go by so I could grab onto something. You know that sea of life metaphor? So it's like when you're in that in-between world, I know you do stuff on like near death. My near death is not like other people's near death. Mine is like in the midst of intubation. So it was more like metaphors and such. And I remember, I can't tell you what eternal, some combination of infinite amount of boredom as you struggle to stay alive. But when you're out there and you want to live, you just do it. And you hear those stories about people who like stay out in the ocean for like a day or two. That's what it felt like, except it was like a month. And I fought to survive. And in this world, the situation you could see slowly after that first week, I got better and better, but it wasn't really clear until the third or fourth week in intubation that I would live. But when I woke up, I remember the clear dreams where I didn't want to come back to this world because when you're in that other world, and I know a lot of other people near death say this, you feel so at peace and so connected to something higher. You don't, this world around is like, wait, what is this? And it's strange and it's hard. But I do remember I was telling this, I remember being in a library and my friend told me that's the book of life, I'm always working in metaphors. But it's just like in the library, the spirit said, you really want to go back to that world? And I did. And I did. And I woke up. And when I woke up, they said every day people would come in crying, say, oh my God, I can't believe you lived because. This was NYU, this was New York, and the hospital, and one in every 200 people died. And they had like big trucks of like refrigerated trucks of dead people. And so mine, they consider a semi-miracle because I wasn't just intubated. I wanted abs of steel, but I had lungs of steel. So it was like not a good situation. But it was interesting. I felt the other side. And when I came back, it was nice. Everybody was giving me lots of energy, but I also, when you taste a bit of the other side, it's not easy to come back here. And that's, I'd say, even this is now over 3 years, 3.5 years, maybe 4 now. And I can tell you, I still struggle with living in this world. I've always had a panic of dying. I remember the first time I saw Star Wars and that whole planet was obliterated. And it occurred to me, oh my God, that just might be it, like this. And from that moment forward, that thought brought panic on me. And I don't know if panic is fear. I guess it is fear, but it's not something that's conscious. It's not like, oh, I'm experiencing fear. It's, I will do whatever it takes to live. You know, I will do, panic is like, and so I'd say panic, yes. Fear, no, although some might argue panic is fear. I don't fear death anymore. I do know that there's a spirit world that exists. And it's a bit strange because I spent my whole life fearing death. And when I woke up, I was like, oh no, there's something else. And so I don't have that doubt. I didn't grow up religious. I didn't grow up not religious, didn't grow up with anything. And it became clear that when you connect to that peace. And, you know, my friend said, well, you know, that peace you think is God is just might be the drugs you were on or like something like this, you know? So you hear that argument, it's like, well, maybe that is what it is. It's hard to know for sure. But what I did know is when I was in recovery, I started associating my fear of death, that it wasn't death I was fear of because you don't know one way or another. What you fear is the panic of losing, it's the fear of losing your life. And it would happen because I was, when you wake up from a coma, your whole body atrophies, you can't move. It's really strange. So like you wiggle for the first few weeks and then every month afterwards, you slowly get your body back. It's a very interesting process. So you fall a lot. So I remember feeling the panic of falling and my therapist was telling me that terror you feel about death is actually panic of just your life going. And you don't want to confuse the fear of death with the fear of actually what's happening, which is just your, maybe I'm not explaining myself well, but I don't fear death when I realized that the feelings I was having was really not about death. It was just about the natural part of the body reacting off of losing itself as opposed to some closure that I was worried about. So it was a different fear. And once I could define the fear as simply, oh, this body, of course it's going to feel terror, as opposed to a concept of complete obliteration and nihilism. Once I was able to distinguish those two things, yeah, my fear went away. I didn't have fear anymore. It sometimes comes back every now and then, but more often than not, no. And I do tell people, when I tell people my story, they can feel me, feel spirit. And when they do that, they go, oh, wow, there is that other side. And I go into that. But, you know, I in the last 3 years, I do go back and forth. I studied all the different religions and death and what they thought of it, and came to the conclusion there, you're not going to know one way or another. So like at that point, I learned, as you go through this experience, you experience intense anxiety and intense depression as you come back to the world. And I've had to really been forced to learn how to deal with my anxiety thoughts and depression thoughts. And when it comes to death, it's actually not worth it. It became clear it wasn't worth it. And I just kind of let it go because I'm not going to know one way or another. Before my near-death experience, I wasn't able to see it that way. It just, all I experienced was panic and terror. It was actually when I was falling and experiencing the same panic, and I realized, oh, it's my physical body, as you were saying, or the memories that I'm fearing of losing, and it's not so clear that's going to happen. So it just became an unnecessary experience to fear that which can't be understood. One of my biggest triggers in life is like, oh, I'm always thinking what should happen. And the moment I think of my shoulds in the world, I could tell my brain starts getting rattled in anxiety and I lose myself. And when I breathe and let the shoulds go and articulate the things that I do love, that was the gift. And for me, having a near-death experience was an incredible gift. I spent my 20s and 30s seeking to be an acrobatic all-star. In my dream, in my coma, one of my biggest memories changed everything was once I was getting better, I was dancing in all of the biggest conventions in the world. I was an all-star. And I remember being offered something finally to satisfy this desire to be an all-star. And I remember the spirit told me, you just need to drive to the bottom of the world, take this diamond to take it to the top, and you'll finally achieve everything you wanted. And I said, fantastic. And the spirit said, but you'll have to run some people over on the way. And I was like, no problem. I had no problem with that. And I immediately got into the car and I drove to the bottom world, took the diamond, I took it to the top of the world. And I remember it's like one last chance. Are you sure you want to do this? And there wasn't anything that hesitated, because my whole life, all I wanted was glory. All I wanted was that admiration of people looking over me, fawning over me. And I finally got it. And it was this diamond, and I brought it to the top. And in that moment, a spirit took me. I don't know if I can really share the depth of what happened, but a spirit took a sword and sliced me in half. And at the same time, in the other hand, showed me an infinite amount of worlds and realities to the left. And I remember being humbled by the wackiness of, oh my God, I've been leading my last 25, 30 years, maybe longer, trying to achieve this level of happiness. Whereas when you see the depth of what the spirit showed me, it's absurd. It's like, why would you do that? And from that moment forward, I don't know when it was when I was in a coma, probably my guess is somewhere in two weeks. But I remember waking up with clarity from this to say, I will never seek that level of experience of life again. What I want from life is people. And I knew I was not married, or I was divorced. I didn't have kids. And I thought for the last 25 years, I pushed everybody away only if they helped me achieve my dreams to be an acrobatic all-star, which I somewhat achieved, but I still wanted more. And when I woke up, I said, oh, this was empty. And I had to, when I woke, it's funny, I got a parade when I came home. People were so happy that I came back. And, you know, hundreds of, maybe not, maybe 100 people or something like that outside my house were so excited to see me. And they gave me everything I've always been looking for, but like only because I was alive. And I got like this different type of love. I didn't have to perform to be loved. I was loved because I was loved for me. And I was able to distinguish finally that My worth as a person and who I am is what I want to live and be cherished by, not by my accomplishments. And since I got home, the last 3 years have been completely different. And I could never live the life I led before. And so for me, near death was a connection to spirit, but it was also the best thing that ever happened to me, because it shed the doldrums and my life became very different. I wrote 18 books the last 3 years. I know most of them are curriculum books and they're self-published, so it's easy to write. But because I was a social emotional teacher at the largest middle school in Brooklyn, and I thought to myself, I have all this knowledge. It's not there. It's like, I'm going to write it. And I did that. I wrote everything I wanted to do. And when you have near death, I think everybody will say, you don't go back to the life you lived. You push yourself to create the connection between people, do the art that you've always wanted to do, contribute. For me, it was contribution. Contribution was the most essential thing to do. And 3 years later, now I do want to do America's Got Talent one more time. I called the producer and I said, all right, I got a great new act. And it's true, but I do it in a different mode. I do it because now I want to share something, not because I'm great, but I want to share a story that's going to be connected to people. If it happens, great. If it doesn't, that's okay too. I'm not tied into the happiness, but I am tied into what makes me happy, what makes the people around me happy, but instead of trying to get something that will make me happy. And that shifted for me forever. When you're in a coma, you don't take in this world the way this world is. It's kind of like when you sometimes wake up and you are not quite here and you had an existence in your dream and you're trying to get back to this world, but you already have another world in your dream. Being in a coma is like that. And when you're in that other world, the other outside information, my dance partner, my ex-wife, she played all of our music. The reason I was having all these visions of dancing, because she was playing all of our shows right next to me when I was in the coma. And so like it was infused, and people would have conversations with me that I remember that were that got into my dreams. And that's why I say this, because people will say, you know, do people really hear you if you're in a coma? And I'm like, I can tell you 100%, there's no doubt in my mind that I heard everything and felt it. I don't feel it in the way that we're talking now. It gets produced in a metaphors and different type of, in that in-between dream world that like sort of like interprets the outside world and puts in whatever story's running. I say that because there was no sequence or one spirit. There was definitely... It was just depending on what was happening in the outside world and what journey I was going on in the inside world. Some parts of the journey was fighting. Some parts of the journey was, I mean, it must have been the drugs or the dancing, but I was having a great time. Like, it was a glorious experience. And then sometimes there were deep lessons. Like, that one moment, I think it happened to me 2 weeks into the coma. That was a different spirit. Most religions, there's that spirit that shows you the underworld and that shows you the divinity. In Hinduism, the Arjuna is taken by Krishna to see the cosmos. And I was a religion major in college, so it's not totally, you know, so some of that might just be influenced from my, but to be honest, I didn't think much about religion for the last 25 years. So it was very surprising to have all the spiritual experiences while under. But yeah, it wasn't one spirit. It was based on what was going, probably a bit was happening outside and my body recovering, my desire to stay to live, and trying to reconcile while living. It's like when you reconcile while living, for me, it wasn't just fighting to live, it was also reconciling my life. And that was happening at the same time. And in order to reconcile that, I needed to take on the big questions, like why did I spend 25 plus years trying to only achieve glory, whereas glory is quite an illusion. You're going to be happy if you do that. It feeds an ego rather than feeding what I assume other people have seen that I didn't know, but which is like life is meant to be connecting and spread love and experience love. And that's not the way I lived. It's the way I mostly live now as much as I can. But it's not the way I lived. And so during the coma was really reconciling the disharmony inside of my soul that needed to be balanced. And yeah, to me, I thought I was ready to go. I was married. I had a good life, a good career, excellent friends, amazing experiences. But when you want to extinguish things, I've done great things in the last 3 years, but nothing worth necessarily living for, where I said, oh, I have to live. I think some people stay alive to like take care of their kids or to stay with their family. I wasn't that connected to anyone. I felt I needed to do that. It was a pure, to be honest. I mean, other people apparently had a great connection to me, and that made some ways that way. But my connection, I didn't really experience that. I just thought the face-to-face with nothingness is terror panic sit in. And I was like, actually, no, I take back everything I said about wanting to die. I refuse to let that go. I could say I know the experience of being connected to a higher force. And I could tell you that that's a better world. And once you connect to that, this world seems odd. That memory's still in me today, way stronger than the nihilism. Sometimes the nihilism comes in, but it hasn't. It did the first few. But if you look at it, like you said, I don't think it was death. And I was working with a therapist in the hospital who really, she was an interesting one. She told me to face the fear, face the terror, don't walk away from it. And I say, oh my God, if I feel this terror, I feel like you're gonna throw me in a loony bin. And she said, well, if they do, I'll get you out, I promise. And so for the first time in my life, instead of running away, I faced the fear. And I can tell you, it's not fun. But for the next set of months, I just faced death and fear of death and just accepted fear as a separate reality than the concept of fear of death. It was just feeling the fear. And once I felt the fear enough, it opened up space for me to really know that I don't know anything. And that's actually more my reality than anything else. And I do remember feeling connected in that other world. And when you feel that connection, that's where my money's on. I think that's there.